I wanted to make a few remarks before we actually get into it, with the recognition that I personally, anyway, feel it's very presumptuous for me to be up here talking. For several reasons. One is there are many people in this community who have a lot of experience with different lifestyles and community. And secondly, I always have a hesitation about talking something rather than demonstrating it with action. Personally, I distrust words, and it's easy for me to get into a hypocrisy or hypocritical situation because I'm talking it rather than doing it. And so I approach this with some hesitation. And another reason too, I came across a phrase the other day when I was reading, a modesty of spirit, which is similar to modesty of the body, is this is very personal to me. And to talk about it to strangers is a whole lot different than be doing it with friends. And so I have a hesitation there. But I also know that it's important to do it. It's a truth I believe in. It's a truth I'm trying to practice. It's my truth. It isn't what Vernal and I are attempting to do is appropriate for us. It may not be appropriate for you or for other people. But if there's something that we can share that has value to you, then it's worth doing. And it also has the value in the sense that for it to grow, it's necessary to proclaim it and to acknowledge it. So with that, then we'll start.
I have been a wandering, and I have traveled far, and one conclusion I have made is God don't own a car.
He don't wear no fancy clothes, he'd rather take the bus. He would pay a tourist fare so he could sit with us.
And when our life on earth is through, we'll sit among the stars. We'll join his band and we'll understand why God don't own the car.
Which I like because that song is a summary of the approach that we've made in our lives, and for me it all started with deciding to go to Africa when we were first married. And for my part, I had to go to Africa because of a sense of terrible responsibility, a sense that having come from a life where I had all that I needed and more, that I was under some brutal necessity to go to a place where people had very little and where I had so much and could give so much. I felt that I would die in Africa. And when we got there and had been there 3 weeks, I threw away the slides that I had taken of schoolyards and buses and downtown malls and everything. They were so inappropriate because I had gone from a sense of guilt thinking I had everything to give. And it took me only a few hours, only a few days to realize that thank God I had been, that I was there, because the West Africa that we went to overwhelmed us and turned me from a guilty, strangely responsible feeling person into one that could see everyday joy, could see that one, all days are not equal, could see that fear women and live long, could see the humor in life, and could see the day-to-day living, so that I got the gift there, to my total surprise, of losing my strange sense of missionary responsibility and being taught by the African community to live in joy. And to live in joy meant that I needn't worry about what tomorrow was going to bring, that I could actually rely on the Creator to take care of tomorrow. And I have read since then that it is a burden for people to consider going into community or to consider living what one thinks of as a simple life without the basic belief in being cared for tomorrow, so that one need only expend the energy and the work and intelligence to take care of today. I didn't know that and didn't ask for it, but that was the gift, and that's the most important thing that I think a simple lifestyle is based on.
Our lifestyle in our community has evolved over a long time. The lifestyle over our whole marriage, and the community over 20 years approximately. This evolution has taken place on the basis of all the experiences that we've had, of course, and all the role models, things we've read, the friends we've had, the travels that we've done. And Africa was one of the most significant ones. We had that early in our marriage. We went there in the mid-60s for 2 years. We went very naive. And we went with a sense of duty, and we found we were blessed immensely. Verna mentioned what she learned from it. Some of the things that I learned from it were the dash was one. The West Africans practice a dash, and it's got some negative connotations in the form of a bribe, but the original sense of it, and it's still practiced when we were there, was a unconditional gift. I thought I knew what an unconditional gift was until I went to Africa. Then I came to recognize that say if the daughter of a business associate is getting married, it would be very inappropriate for me to give that couple, say, a Volkswagen car. Everybody would think I was weird and strange and didn't know what was right and proper gifting. In Africa, you could gift anything to anyone with no condition. And likewise, you could ask. You could ask to be dashed from a stranger. And that's an experience I hadn't had before, and it rattled my cage. And the beauty of it is that's precisely what our Christianity teaches us: unconditional gift. And so we were there in a relatively wealthy situation. Somebody who was extremely poor could come up to us and give us a dozen eggs. They may eat a dozen eggs in the whole year, but they would gift it to us. No conditions, no strings, nothing, just I dash you. And likewise, they can ask for the same thing. It's beautiful. Another thing was what was called Ochina. I call it Ochina. On the school compound was a German, young German architect working to build the school. He was there as a missionary. And he was trying to get as much done in the 6 months as possible. And the workers would just kind of slough him off, the local guys working. They slough him off and they say, don't worry, Ochina, which is tomorrow. But it isn't in the same sense that we're taught to think about it. Ochina means we will come back, we'll work at it. It will get done because we'll work together at it. The process is more important than the production. How much we get done today means nothing. How we do it is everything. And those guys would come to work singing, laughing, joking. They'd spend the day working, having a good time, and they'd leave work with fun. The process was more important than the production, how they did it. That's wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful to come to work singing. And yes, they didn't get as much work done, but they were there every day. Okay. Thank you. You have tried. You have tried is a way of looking at things. If I were to say to one of you, you have tried at something, we usually have the sense that, oh, I fell short. T- To an African to say to me, you have tried, means you have tried. You've dared to make the risk, to take the risk, to do it. What you accomplish with it, whether you're successful with it, whether you fail, is secondary to the fact you have tried. Okay. We learned hospitality there. There's no motels. There's no place to stay. And so when you travel, you ask, where can I stay? And you get names of people. Someone will show up at your door 6 o'clock at night, a stranger, knock on your door and say, my name is such and such. John said that if I showed up here, you might give me a place to stay tonight. We did it, people would do it with us. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful sense of hospitality. No other introduction. And we also learned community there as well, because we lived on a small school compound. And within that compound, we formed a community.
How about if you say what our way of getting through our life and our community is?
No?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm missing what you want.
Why don't you describe what we live like?
Oh, no? Okay. That's way down here, because we're taking up a lot of time?
Yes.
Okay. Our present community is a role model. It's based upon a farm that we bought 20 years ago, a very cheap, inexpensive, beat-up, old, run-down fin farm at the end of a road. And over the years, people have moved onto the land with us. First of all, 15 acres on the back 40 were sold to some friends who built a home there. They've become better friends over the years. We moved from the house into the barn. We have friends living in the house now. Just in the last year, we've bought another 40 adjacent, and another friend has built a house there. And then we have an old Finnish couple across the road from us, a brother and sister in their 80s, who are part of the community. So it's a rural community. It's an informal one in that we have no agreement amongst ourselves as to what our arrangement is between us, and it changes from time to time. It's a very loose community in that it's a collection of families who have a mutual sense of responsibility, and each person defines that for themselves. There is no formal agreement as to what you have to do for each other. The bonding that takes place there is based upon friendship. To a lesser degree, depending upon who's there, there's a service philosophy amongst most of the participants. There's also a Christian philosophy amongst most of the participants, or active Christian philosophy. For the most part, well, it's about half Orthodox, half unorthodox Christianity as well. And probably the main element is there's a long-term reliability amongst the people. We aren't strangers to each other. Everybody there has been known to Vernal and I for at least 20 years. Okay. The way we maintain that community varies with the other families. One family we have Vespers with once a week, Vespers and then dinner. Another family, we go down and cook a dinner with them every other Sunday. We frequently have coffee breaks together. We stop and talk to each other. And occasionally, when there's a need for it, we have a community meeting.
And we have our holidays together.
And celebrations, birthdays, that type of thing. One of the families is really good at pushing the idea of celebration and of fostering that. So we have parties together.
We want to know what interests you for your own self about community or about a simpler lifestyle. And so it's useful if you'll present questions. And while you're thinking of questions you may have, I want to tell you what living simply to me means that we've aimed a long time at spending less money than we even do now, because we still spend too much money, that we've aimed at causing ourselves to create, to generate less and less money so that we can't spend it on the basis of things that we've learned from living in other countries, of seeing how if you live with other people, you really don't need as much. That's just all there is to it. It's just all there is to it. It's that simple. But I was going to say that while you think of your questions, I want to tell you that for me, a part of the community also are the animals. And right now I'm low on animals because Eric and I have been out for 2 years. And so we've had to, we can't let the goats have babies and can't milk. And, you know, the dog died, so we don't have a new dog yet. And chickens, you know, things like that. But for me, the creatures are real community people too. For one thing, we don't kill creatures once we have them. They become a part of the community, and generally they're creatures that do work. The goats give milk, the dogs bark, the chickens lay eggs, the cock crows, you know, that kind of thing. And the wild animals too. We don't hunt the animals on our collective 100 and some acres that we have now, so that we hope that the deer will come to feel like, hey, we can hang out here okay, you know, maybe run that way during hunting season. Anyway, I have learned from my goats that it's real good when the sun shines to get out there and put your backside out and let the sun warm your fur, and that if the weather's bad, you should seek shelter and lay low, and that this is a good way to live. That's the other thing that I've learned from our community members is how really difficult it is to live in community. How many of you have taken the Myers-Briggs test? Well, how many extroverts are here? How many introverts are here? Fools, and here we are in community, right? Because it's really hard. It's really hard for people who get scattered without a lot of solitude to be spending a lot of time with people out of the necessity of needing relationship. What it costs me to live in community is a sense of attractiveness to live in community and with our lifestyle. And what I mean by that is that when I was operating with money and with normal values, I know I looked better because there was more money to put into the maintenance and more of a responsibility, you know, to do that. So I'm aware now that because we've been living all this time like this, that I look more like I belong on a bus than that I belong in Dayton's, you know? You guys do too, incidentally.
A bus?
But you know what I mean, don't you?
Yes.
It's a cost. It's a cost. Because that attractiveness is also viewed, by others as being, you know, there's a cost to that loss of attractiveness. And the other cost has been a deepening awareness of difference between myself, ourselves, and the prevailing community, the culture in town or in the state or in the country, in fact, so that sometimes there is, and I know you know this yourselves, as community people, there can be a deep sense of isolation and sadness. And I think sometimes that is the very incentive for then leaving home once again for yet another trip out somewhere, to be somewhere else again. It increases the desire to sojourn. Those are costs. Can we take some questions? Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, let me add a couple of just clarifying points. Vernon and I have totally different personalities, and so we complement each other in many ways. I would like to say that to make it a little bit clearer, our lifestyle is what we consider a subsistence surplus lifestyle. We learned this in our travels and seeing people living simple lives in other countries, and of seeing the grace that's in their life and the fullness of their Christian faith, living simple lifestyles. we came back to this country believing that this is an overdeveloped country. Not a developed country, an overdeveloped country. And we have the intention of trying to consume less. And so we live this subsistence surplus lifestyle. It requires less money to live. The rewards of that are time for me. I have abundant time. I can do basically what I want with my life because I spend so little time doing work money or money work. The other rewards are, Verna mentioned that the animals in our lifestyle and in our community, I get what I consider to be the four graces. Grace from my faith. I get grace from tender loving care of other people. I get grace from the animals, and I get grace from nature. I'm very wealthy in that sense. Surprisingly, what has come with this lifestyle is security. Security not because I've got future problems taken care of, but security because the lifestyle is so simple, it doesn't take much to take care of them. And that's easy to come by. And finally, I've got more surplus money with this lifestyle than I've ever had when I worked full time, which still surprises me.
I cannot say this myself. One of the things Eric and I do is we keep our money separate. We earn our own incomes and share what we need to for maintenance of our system, and then we earn or use money beyond that as we need. And apparently I need. Have any questions?
Two things come to mind. People in your community, you don't all live in the same building. Apparently there are different buildings and so on. I'd like to know what kind of arrangement it is there. And other people coming in, you know, you have this community. And something that disturbs communities, certainly, are other people coming into the community, whether somebody had a visit. How do you handle
good
that?
Good question.
Answer.
I'll answer the second question. People coming into the community, people coming in permanently. The last person who's joined our community is Charlotte, and three families went together to buy 40 acres as it came up for sale so that Charlotte could build a place there, although we own the land jointly. And Charlotte has lived with us at other times over a period of the last. We met Charlotte in Africa, and she's lived with us before, and it's only been, you know, now that it's successfully happened. Other people have come to stay with us for weeks at a time and lived in the sauna or something, or stayed over the winter or longer, but we've not considered them to be community members. And when people come to visit, we enjoy these people, we share them around. They belong to all of us, and it's fun, and so that there's more activity as there would be here.
And your first question, I think it's been, you're probably aware of that we function as nuclear families in community, so that we live separately. Although over the years, people have lived with us in our house with us for short periods of time, 6 months or so, 2 months, 3 months.
And then you say they build or otherwise have other spaces that...
Basically, we only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 houses, families. Yeah.
I've been interested in alternative communities for many years, and many of my friends have as well. I think a few of us that are more serious about it than others come up against a problem, and that's just it. A lot of people talk about it. I wonder how you find people that really want to do it. How do you get it started? It would be easy for me to move in with 5 other people on a 40-acre farm, but I couldn't buy it myself and wait for those. Come along. I wonder how you got it going and who you met and what kind of commitment you each made.
Should I answer that? We didn't start off with the intention of forming community. We make our decisions intuitively. We were leaving an orthodox lifestyle. I had been an engineer. We had a 3-bedroom brick ranch home on 17 acres with a 30-year mortgage and, you know, 2 weeks vacation a year type of thing.
We had a cabin, we had 2 cars, we had ever so many things, don't you know?
And Verna said I was getting boring. And she was right. And so we worked it out that we bought this farm, and it was a cheap farm. It was $11,500. And even today, you know, it's I don't know what the equivalent would be, but we could go to for a 10-year mortgage on that, and so we didn't have to have the support of other people to do that. The community itself evolved just naturally. We didn't have the intention of forming community so much as wishing to be in close association with our friends. And so when a young couple that had lived on the farm next door to us on a temporary basis was looking for land, that was the first step. We were faced with the age-old problem of we've got 80 acres and it's ours, you know. How much of that are we willing to give up? And we struggled and struggled and struggled before we could offer them 15 acres. I mean, it's the possession is like that, and that proved to be good. That was a beautiful experience. It was the best investment we ever made in our lives. Was to have them move in on the back 40, and it just happened naturally then.
And then when we asked our friends if they wanted to have our house, they had been living in, they had formed an urban community in Duluth, the Chester Creek House, and had established the first Chester Creek Cooperative and Workers Cooperative, and were extremely active community people. So they understood precisely what they were getting into in coming to live with us in 85. And then Charlotte, who had come and gone over the years, came back this last couple of years. So it has formed itself, and in that then the community also finds itself creating itself. For a long time we were the only people calling in the community. Our friends would refer to us as their neighbors, even though they were our children's guardians and that we used money back and forth and everything. But the idea was an uncomfortable one for them. They preferred to be friends who were neighbors rather than community members.
It's been a long evolution, and it just happens naturally in our case. But like we had the Solems who are living in the house now, they formed this community in Duluth, and they did it intentionally with two families buying a large house in Duluth and starting it, and then just spreading the word and came together.
Obviously you accumulated a group of people around you that are amenable to each other. There's been no adversity, and how do you handle that, or have you found any disagreements?
It's good. This last year, when we were in British Columbia for a year or so, in Canada. No, where have we been the last 2 years? We've been in Alaska and British Columbia this last 2 years. And while we were away, I came to a high awareness of what it was.